This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 248. The world didn't end.
So it's back to work, everybody!
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sista.
I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to our podcast episode for this week. You know, the week leading into E3?
Well, no, because there's this week, and then there's next week, and that's the week after that. So technically, there's still 2 weeks between us.
No, I'm thinking of it now as the week leading into E3.
But it's not.
But it is.
But it's not.
In my mind, it is.
You're lying to yourself.
I'm not lying to myself.
And you're lying to our listeners.
I'm not lying to our listeners.
They don't appreciate liars.
I'm not. No. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the week after this doesn't exist.
But it does exist.
But it doesn't in my mind.
It doesn't spatial time.
But reality. I hate reality.
Yeah, me too.
But I want it to be E3 so bad.
I want it to be the Sunday that we're already in LA. Like, I don't want to do the Sunday morning to LA. Like, I really don't. Like, I wish we could fast forward through the plane ride. Because I really
don't. It's not going to be that bad. For those that don't know, Pandalicious does not like flying.
I fucking hate flying. As averse to coloring, which I fucking love.
Who doesn't fucking love coloring?
But I fucking hate flying and playing.
But it's not going to be a big deal. First of all, we're taking Pimp Airlines. And by that, I mean Virgin America. All right? So we're going to have Wi-Fi on the plane.
I'm just saying.
It's literally going to be like you're chilling in your room and you might, like, every once in a while realize that you're moving.
That's not helping.
But it's going to be fine. I'll be there. KBD will be there. Guess what? More than likely, most of the plane is going to be filled with people going out to LA for easy. So you're going to be full of a plane of gamer nerds.
Maybe.
Dude, I shit you not. I shit you not. There's going to be a ridiculous amount
matter.
Of people on this flight.
We're going to be in the air. I'm terrified. I know we're going to get there fine, but I'm going to be terrified right into the fact that I'm in the seat and there's nowhere I can go.
Dude, don't be terrified.
Too late.
We'll order some food, you know?
It's too late.
It's a little early to get drinks, but we could do that too.
Mimosas. It's early morning. They can do mimosas. Give me like 4 of those, I'll be straight. Regardless.
But anyway, E3 is around the corner. We're very excited about it. Most of the schedule is actually put into place right now, which is the earliest, by the way, that we've ever had our schedule in place for an event.
I know, but I still haven't gotten word from Atlas, and I really wanted to talk about Catherine.
Well, keep dogging him. Hit their Twitter account up, the PR guy.
Okay.
That's probably the fastest way to get a hold and be like, I emailed yous.
I sent two.
Yeah, but if there's anybody else, you know, in the industry who is within the sound of my voice right now, and you think that we should come by and, you know, see what you got, hit us up, mailbag@landofesh.com, because, you know, there's always room to squeeze somebody in.
I'm pretty open, since a lot of people aren't responding to me, so I'm open to come for
I know, that's kind of odd. Like, KBD and Ham are pretty much book solid now. Maybe you need to get on your grind, community manager. You gotta get on the grind. Gotta grind it out.
I need a mortar and piston.
You need a mortar and pestle.
Yeah, that thing. And a pistol, too.
The last thing you need is a pistol. But we're digressing. Because we're getting very excited about, you know, video games and whatnot. And pistols actually come into play. See, here comes the segue.
I know.
Are you ready?
So prepared. All right,
here it comes. To lead into the first thing we're going to talk about this week, which I had mentioned a couple of episodes ago. But I think we put a thing up on the... Yeah, I did. I put one of the trailers up on the website for the game that Panda has become addicted to, and I just haven't picked up yet because this week I'm playing the role of broke ass mofo. L.A. Noire by Rockstar Games. So before I let you take it away,
okay,
and I am gonna let you take it away.
Oh, I know you're gonna.
But I have to say that, you know, in the time that I got to spend with it at PAX East, the trailers that they've been releasing, everything I've been reading up about the game, the releases that they put out, the artwork that they've seen, I was impressed with L.A. Noire. As I let you guys all know, before I even saw it, I watched Panda jump into the game, like literally start it from scratch, and I gotta tell you, I'm even more impressed. And it's been a while since I've been impressed with a completely new IP. So, without further ado, Panda, what do you got for the people?
Don't poke me in the face.
Well, obviously, duh, I have L.A. Noire. I did get it for the 360, which...
Achievement unlocked!
It's really weird because I flipped a coin.
Because I'm not looking to get any trophies.
Regardless, but that's not why I was even flipping a coin for it. Because, I mean, I'm not a big fan of games that have multiple discs in them, because that just means a lot more content. Usually,
dude, text-based. Shenmue was awesome, though. Come on, now.
And Lost Odyssey was good, too. But, you know, the comparison between both the PS3 and 360 versions is the 360 version has three discs. It's a multiple disc set, as opposed to, you know, PS3 bombing it out on one disc because it's a Blu-ray disc.
Yeah, but I think that just speaks, or should speak a lot to how deep the game is, and really, how much detail is in the game.
There's a lot. There's amazingly a lot of detail.
I mean, when you look at the graphics, comparing, let's just be fair, since it's Rockstar, right? We're going to compare Rockstar to Rockstar. When you play, and you look at L.A. Noire, and you look at, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4, they look completely different. Characters look...
Not even. We're jumping a little further than you even have to, because remember, Rockstar did release Red Dead Redemption, which was...
Yeah, but even with Red Dead...
I know, but if you want to do a true comparison, let's go from fairly recent to current
now. Well, I'm talking comparison as far as gameplay.
Well, because I think the gameplay between Red Dead Redemption and GTA 4 are the same. The only thing is the filter is different, the scene is different, and the era is different. And L.A. Noire, you know, in some regards does remind me a lot of, you know, the frame, the foundation of GTA, but it is not GTA, or at least I haven't seen it going into disc 2. So like I said, this is a multiple disc game on the 360. And a lot of people are like, oh, it's just going to be GTA 4, but in the 1940s. Yes and no. Yes, in terms of the game mechanics, you do have a lot of similarities between how you operate your fucking boat or your car. I call it a boat. It's fucking huge.
Were you on a boat?
I'm on a boat and I'm going really fast. And I had a Pashmina Afghan.
No, you didn't.
I don't even know what Pashmina is. I know, okay, it's sad. It's nautical themed Pashmina Afghan.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, you didn't.
I didn't know. Stop it. Regardless, like I said, game mechanics and game controls are very similar.
Okay.
They are. But the game is so big, and I mean, this is no surprise, it's Rockstar. They tend to like to create really big open world scenarios. I don't feel that it's nearly as open world as people were expecting it to be, which is a refreshing surprise.
Okay.
So, I mean,
describe.
In your premise, the premise of the story, you play Cole Phelps,
mm-hmm.
who is a cop who came from the war. And I believe it's World War One. I think.
1940s. Been paying attention, have we?
1940s. Uh-huh. They're fighting the Japanese. Uh-huh. I think it's World War One.
Uh-huh.
And he's coming from that, so he's trying to reintegrate himself back into
society.
You know, society, coming from, you know, being a lethal killing machine.
Right.
And during each transition, so there's really not much of a loading screen, because during loading screens you get flashbacks of his past.
Okay.
So you get little bits of that, and you're trying to piece it together while you're going through your day-to-day as him. And you start off as a patrol officer. So you're the guys in blue. You're pretty much just doing a standard, you know, run of a crime scene, trying to find the murder weapon, trying to establish your motive, your, you know, who's involved, and where you need to go to find your perp.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a patrol officer, it's pretty standard. Okay, yeah, this dude shot this black guy. Up, oh, left his gun. Up, oh, there's a number on it. Let's go to a gun shop. Yep, I sold it. That's the guy. Beat the fuck out of him. Boom, you're done.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think the inverse to this game versus a GTA, where you're kind of, you're a man who has to decide whether he's going to walk on the side of light or the side of dark, you know, and deal with seedy underground stuff or be above it and try not to get involved. In this game, you're really kind of a straight, very uptight. Like, Cole's really, he's like, I'm a good guy and I'm here to defend people. And if I have to make hard choices, I have to make hard choices. And yeah, that's pretty true. You pretty much have to make really hard choices. And you're on the side of law this time. So you're not the one busting into banks to rob. You're there trying to stop people from robbing the bank and killing their wives. And that seems to be happening a lot right now.
A lot of people trying to kill their wives?
A lot of people are killing their wives in this game.
Damn!
But, so I mean,
was they cheating? Because I can understand it if they were
cheating. It's weird. Because remember, this is the 1940s. So, you know, people didn't just get up and divorce. You know, people would, fake their death to escape a marriage. That actually does happen in the game. You do get a case where you do find out that somebody is trying to stage their death so that they can go hit some ass in Seattle.
Ah!
You do. If you play it right.
That's kind of skeevy.
So outside of just being, you know, a cop trying to do good, you know, there is this beautiful interrogation aspect to this game. Because not only do you have to break down this crime scene and pretty much find your perp, but then you have to get them to confess that they did it. Right. And all the witnesses that could have information that could lead you to the right person.
Right.
Later on in the game, a lot of your cases will involve where there's so many different aspects to this crime that it looks like one element could be the right one, but it's not. So you can't just go in and say, oh yeah, I totally got all the checkpoints, so I beat the case. No, you need to put it all together correctly. Interrogate everybody correctly so you get all the right answers so that you can point your finger at the right person and your case, you know, you get ranked in terms of your cases. Okay. So you can get like 5 stars where you get everything. You find all the clues. You interrogated everybody correctly. So to talk about the interrogation a little bit, one of the things they were highlighting in a lot of these trailers is that when you are interrogating someone, you have to be looking at their reactions to what you've asked. You have to pay attention to their body language because they're not going to be like, yeah, I totally killed him. Nope. If they're telling you the truth, they tend to look you straight in the face. There's no expression because they're not trying to recall anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you've assembled all your clues and you're interrogating someone, if you know they're lying but you don't have the proof right now to prove it, you have to doubt them. And if they obviously say something that you know is false and they're lying to you, you can just lie and confront them with that evidence. So you can't go in there all law and order and be like, yeah, bitch, I know you're lying. Even though we all know that they're all lying about something, you can't just accuse them about lying about the main crime. Because that might not be what they're hiding.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds really deep. Now,
it is.
It's interesting that you bring up the interrogation thing because we were, you know, discussing what we were going to talk about on this week's show. And Xenocore actually was going to be with us, but unfortunately something popped up and he couldn't, but he had sent along a note to us and he's like, look, I have a statement that I would like to make about L.A. Noire because I'm very passionate about this. And he basically says, whenever I do an interrogation, even though I have 6 hours playing this game, every time I guess wrong, right when I hear the freaking piano play those notes, I go full rage comic as loud as possible and I love every minute of it. Pain is gaming. So yeah. I would love for you to talk a little bit about the music thing that he brings up in interrogation. Because that's one thing we haven't touched on.
Yeah.
I think it adds a lot to the suspense and the feeling.
It does. I mean, reminder, this is back in the 1940s. So, I mean, you've got a lot of jazz. There's no MP3s. It's all like speakeasies with a voice. So, I mean, music plays a lot to the atmosphere of this game. So, I mean, like, when you enter into a scene and you're looking for crimes, there's always music playing.
Okay.
You know, and when you get close to a clue, something that you can look at, your controller will vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not everything that you can look at has anything to do with your case. But, I mean, the ones that do, if you keep examining them, you'll find the bit of the evidence that will store in your notebook, because you have a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
During the interrogations, like Zeno's talking about, after they say a statement, like, in one of the cases, I won't say where, you're talking to a wife, and you know, because you go searching through her house, and you find, if you're smart, and you look everywhere, and I mean, this took me about 30 minutes to find everything in this goddamn house, and I mean, the house only had, like, 4 rooms in it, so I was like, what am I not looking at? Like, what is it, game? And they don't lead you. You really have to find it yourself. Because, I mean, you can easily solve the case poorly without even picking up a shred of evidence and just accusing. I've tried that. Don't do it. don't do it. But when you're interrogating someone, you know, like I said, they do give you the option that you think they're telling the truth, there's doubt, or they're lying. Mm-hmm. Now, if you guess correctly, then the music, you know, the piano is like, dun-dun-dun, and it's light. It ends on a higher note because you've assessed it properly. When you're wrong, and sometimes even doubting them can be the wrong answer. It can. Like, if you doubt what they're saying and you've got evidence to prove that they're lying or that they're telling the truth, and I do hate it. Because I'm like, I'm not sure. You know, because sometimes they'll tell you the truth. Like, in one case, there's an actress. And her car's been thrown over an embankment. And she's talking about how she's been doped up. However, you find a prop that ledged the accelerator to the floor, so she wasn't in the car when it went over. She staged it.
Okay.
So she's acting.
Uh-huh.
And she's acting doped up, so she's staggering a little bit. She's pretending not to focus, so I had the hardest time with this particular woman. And literally, the first few times I played this game through the tutorial, I was fucking up. On the first tutorial case, which pretty much like, if you think this person's lying, you should hit Y, and you should hit...
I feel like after we finish this podcast, you need to drive me to GameStop, and I need to buy this game.
Okay. But, regardless, so, I mean, you really have to be paying attention to their reactions. Like, because, you know, some people you can tell right away. Like, in one of the cases, you meet a black railroad worker.
A railroad worker?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A railroad worker.
Shut up.
Say what you said.
And he's the one who finds the crime scene. He calls it in right away. You know, and the person whose car it is, their wallet, is on the ground. And license is there. A picture of him and his wife are in there. There's no money in it. So as you're interrogating this guy, if you do it correctly, you know, at one point, you know, you bring up the fact that there was nothing in the wallet. And the black guy's like, wait, are you trying to accuse me of something? And literally, as soon as he finishes, his whole mouth, like, purses. Like, I know something you don't know. Like, they got it really good. But I was like, did you steal from this dead man? I'm like, it has nothing to do with the crime, but why steal? Like, I mean, if I found a dead body, would I check the wallet? Yeah. If there was, it depends on how much money there was in it.
When you get back to the music, you thieving, yeah. Horse robbing bitch.
So the music. Yes. So when you answer correctly, like when you outright accuse someone of lying, there is no music because then you have to show evidence to prove that they're lying.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you accuse someone of lying and you don't have the evidence, you can back out of it and then reselect your answer. But when it's wrong, it's a very, I think they're the half notes, those dark, those mm-hmm. dampened notes. So you're kind of like, oh, really? Really? So I definitely understand where Zeno's coming from that, because literally in one of my cases, I had all the evidence to convict this man. And the funny thing is that they must have gotten some really top actors to play some of these characters, mm-hmm. because it's the actor who played Matt Pacman in Heroes.
Okay.
The cop. And he's
Matt
this,
Parkman?
No, Pacman. Parkman.
There you go.
Parkman.
There you go.
What did I say, Pacman?
Yes.
Pacman.
you mean Parkman.
Parkman. And he's a husband. And everything is pointing to him. I mean, everything. Bloody overalls with his initials on them, rope with blood on them. Like, I mean, there is no way it's not him, though now I'm beginning to think that it might not be him.
There's absolutely no way that it's not him, but I think it's not him.
Well, because I'm in another case that's now referencing his case, so I'm like, oh, please don't tell me that I have an innocent man sitting in cell where everything is sitting, like, I mean, all the evidence points to this man, but, you know, there's always that one... Is that one piece
Did you not look at all the clues?
I don't know. I actually think the way that they're mapping it out is that some of the cases that you solve, you have evidence, but it's not all of it. Like, I think they're all going to interwove into something else.
Uh-huh.
interweave somewhere else.
Be intertwined.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the intertwined of the yarn of the law. And
the intertwined but of the but yarn the music of does, the law.
The music can...
I just want to make sure I got that right.
Whatever. The music in this game can, in fact, lead to rage quits. There have been several cases where I fucked up on an interrogation and said, nope, restart. And I've restarted the case 4 or 5 times because I'm like, nope, I know I'm right. I know it. I know it.
Stop spanking my couch.
But, so, I mean, and it does. It does get, it will get to you. But in a good way, because you're like, ooh, like, you might think you doubt something, and it's wrong. You're like, oh, so he was lying to me, that bastard.
So, would you say that what's most interesting about running through LA Noire is really the puzzle-solving, critical thinking thing that you're doing, and less about the action? You know, is there a lot of action? Is it balanced?
I honestly think it's very balanced for, I mean, because if you look at the world, if you look at any screenshots of it, it looks sandbox, but it hasn't opened up in a sandbox way.
Okay.
You know, like, I mean, if you go back to GTA, you started in Crapville and then the other island would open up and then another island would open up and then another island would open up. You could just sit in a car and drive all over this. The world is open, but the story unlocks the rest of... Like, I feel like the story will lead you through the whole city. Lead you through L.A. as opposed to, oh, I did all the missions here, so now I can go over and cross the bridge and go over here. You can go everywhere, and there are street crimes that are going on. So, you know, you could be driving with your partner and get a call from dispatch saying, oh, there's a code F9B going on. And you're like, what the fuck's that? And you're like, all right, I'll go take it. So there's small side missions that can be happening during your day-to-day when you're going towards a plot point.
Mm-hmm.
That you could even just detract from and go and do those side missions and then jump right back into your main story. So, I mean, it is very inclusive. So I would say it's balanced. I haven't felt like, oh, all I'm doing is interrogating. I haven't been bored with a single story.
Okay.
And each interrogation is completely different from the next case.
Okay.
Even if the focal points of the case seem to be the same. And I mean, back in the 1940s, I think in LA, they were talking a lot about the Black Dahlia case.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of that referenced in this game. And I'm only on the second disc. So, I mean, I don't know how big of a focal point that's going to be moving forward in the game. But there are certain cases that seem to keep referencing parts of that case. So I feel like it's important. But I really like it, and I don't feel like it's GTA in the 1940s. Like, I haven't heard anyone come back and say it's totally GTA in the 90s. I don't feel it, because, you know, when you were playing in GTA 4, you know, when you found a bad guy, you really didn't talk to them for very long. You took out your gun or your car, and you rammed them, and you were done. And then you ran from the police.
Yeah, especially if you shot them in the face.
I like to shoot cops. I've already admitted that before when we've talked about
in GTA. Video games. She likes to shoot cops in video games. Clarify.
Yeah. Well, duh. I don't own a real gun. Granted, don't give me a real gun.
Don't ever give Pandalicious an actual pistol.
But, and there are so many different aspects going on in the game and the development of Phelps. Like, I mean, like I said, you start off as a patrol officer. After so many crimes under patrol, you do, depending on how well you do, you get promoted. You know, you move from patrol to traffic, and then you're dealing with a lot of traffic crimes. And then I think your finite point seems to be when you are in homicide.
Mm-hmm.
So you go from patrol to detective and traffic to detective and homicide, which is where I'm at right now, which is why a lot of my cases are based on murders.
Mm-hmm.
So being
a homicide detective, that would make sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think so far a lot of my cases have been feminine-based. Victim's been a female.
I just want to know, when do you get special victims unit?
Like, well, there is one of the cases where you find a dead woman, and you find out that one of the suspects is a kitty diddler.
Oh, that's
so there
bad.
Is, so, and back then in dunk 1940s, they didn't have DNA.
Ew.
So you had to get someone to admit it. And literally, and I mean, I think they got a really good voice actor, because he's like, I've been taught not to talk about the things I like. They make people kind of squeamish. But I like them kind of young. And I'm like, oh, you mother.
Oh,
yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew. Unclean.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, But I know that being in Homicide isn't the top of the tier because you do meet another detective who's in Ad Vice. And I don't know what the Vice is in terms of the hierarchy. I really wish I did because he's like the top detective. And I don't know what he does besides be the top detective.
Okay.
Because I've never seen him like on a case anywhere. But he shows up and like, oh, that's the Ad Vice. I'm like, who the fuck is that guy? And I don't like his suit. Like, I don't. It's an ugly ass suit. I don't know why they'd put him in the suit. But, anyway, I do think you get up to the ranking of the Ad Vice, and then I think that's when you start looking at those cases, but I have no idea what they are yet because I'm not there. Going back to there is a leveling system in L.A. Noir. Depending on how well you interrogate, if you find all the clues, you have a little bar that will fill up after each one. After so many, there are little goal systems. So if you accumulate so many points, you'll get intuition points. Which, if you store up enough of them, I think you can have up to 5. If you're having a hard time finding clues, you can use an intuition point to highlight where all the clues are in an area. Okay. If you're having a hard time in an interrogation and you don't know if they're being truthful or not, you can use it to remove a negative answer. Or you can actually kind of do like a who wants to be a millionaire and ask the community. Okay. Which I actually think what they do is anyone else who's playing the game, like, on your friends list or, like, online right now, they'll take tallies and do percentages of how many people were choosing what answer.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like...
That could be useful.
Yeah. I haven't used that because I think I only have 2 other people on my friends list who were playing it, and they only got it maybe 2 hours after I got it, and I was ahead of them. And they're like, so how did you do this case? I'm like, I can't tell you.
There's no cheat. You know, there's that's no like cheating on your finals.
I mean, I think...
Like, what'd you get for number 5?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of hope that they open up more into the rest of Phelps' story. Because as you're going through it, the first few transitions from the patrol to the traffic detective, you don't know much about Cole's life then. Like, you don't find out until Homicide that he's married and has kids.
Okay.
Like, you don't know it. Because, I mean, you see all these flashbacks of him in the military, but you don't see any... You see pictures of him in a leadership position, having to make tough choices, you know, and people respecting him, but not giving a fuck about him. Right. Like, I respect you and you're my boss. And I'm going to follow you into the hell of, you know, this war. But like, we're not getting drinks after this because we're not cool kind of impression. So you don't know anything about him as a person. You only know him as a machine of the law or a machine of the government. And the only reason why I even know now that he's got a wife and kid is because in Homicide, you get this partner, and his name's Galloway. Big, kind of burly dude. And I actually think he's an actor that I've seen before. Some of these face, you know, with the mocap, you can definitely tell if these are actors that you've actually seen. And I'm like, I've seen this face before, but I don't know from what. So I think he's one of those backdrop people that I've probably seen, like, as an extra somewhere, and he's just popping in my mind. But he's talking. He's like, yeah, I've been divorced 3 times. Yeah, I'm not really good with the ladies. He's like, you know, a woman scorned will do horrible things, Cole. He's like, your wife, she's a woman, you know. And then Cole's like, don't talk about my wife. She's the mother of my children. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I have kids.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah,
that's,
you know, because I mean, and when you are Cole and you're looking, you know, at a crime scene and you're looking at a dead body, because you have to assess that. You know, and me being, you know, coming from a criminal justice perspective, you know, I'm like, you don't wear gloves, you're contaminating evidence, you're like stepping in blood. I'm like, there are so many things that I would never do on a crime scene that you do in these games. I'm like, don't pick up that gun, your prints are on it. Like, oh, what are you doing? Well, where's your bag? Step in
the blood, because it's not like you're going to run a DNA test.
It's hilarious, because actually in one
I mean, the best you're going to be able to be like, all right, the guy that we're looking for is a type, you know, AB negative.
Oh, you can get blood typed in this game.
Yeah,
you
do, but that's about it.
But it's funny, because there's this one...
It's not like you're going to find familial alleles and shit.
It's true. You're absolutely... Yeah, they don't have the technology back in the 1940s.
They just traipse all through that shit.
But, and there's a lot of humor... too, going on, like, on these scenes. Because, you know, like, you have this commissioner who's dead Irish, and I think I've seen him before, too.
Like, dead Irish? How do you do that?
I mean...
Bullet in the head? Like,
no, not dead, but I mean, just straight, like, he's pure. Because, I mean, he's got that accent.
He's so Irish, it hurts.
Yeah. Like, literally, when you first meet him, he's quoting something, and I'm like, I've heard this in Boondock Saints, I just don't remember who said it. You know, and he's just, oh, the something...
What is his name? Finally. Patrick Fitzpatrick?
I think his... last name is Donnelly. actually. Something. They call him Skipper Donnelly, I think. Or the guy I'm with right now, Galloway, calls him Skipper all the time. But he's like, the something of virtue grinds, but it grinds.
Don't hurt yourself, all right? Don't hurt yourself.
But it's in this big Irish brogue. You really can't. Like, he's so Irish. And he's so the angry Irish commissioner type. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want him, like, do what he wants you to do. He's not
Commissioner Gordon from, yeah, Gotham City.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. So, you know, but I mean, getting back, I don't even know where I was going with that now. But
you got stuck on the dead Irish.
I got stuck on the dead Irish. But it's good. Like, the game is good.
It's rich, obviously. It's rich. The story is deep.
It's enriched. There's always something for you to do. Like, I mean, there's a lot of achievements I've been looking through. And a lot of them are secret, which I love and I hate when they do that. I love and I hate it.
Sometimes, you know, it's kind of surprise and delight. Like, I like backing into an achievement. But I really prefer, to be fair, I really prefer games to have the majority of their achievements come from completing the game, completing the story. I do not enjoy when half of the achievements for a game come from the multiplayer. Like, that was the thing that just blew me out of the water with Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, is, like, half of the achievements come from doing stuff in multiplayer.
No, I wouldn't even say half. I would say a third of them, because two-thirds of them were things that you could acquire through your gameplay.
Of Brotherhood.
Yeah,
I would challenge you to go back and look at the actual list.
Because I have most of them. The only ones I don't have are from the multiplayer, because I'm like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, I would challenge you to take a look at the number of them again. I would say that it's split nearly 50-50.
I don't even know. Because there are also a big chunk of achievements that came from that game that required you to be out of the Animus and find, like, relics of 2000 and fuckwad.
Yeah, and I didn't do any of that when I wasn't in the Animus.
Yeah, so I didn't do those either. I'm like, wait, you want me to come out of the Animus? Yeah,
so when you add those into the multiplayer, it's almost half. Because I was counting them the other night because I was looking at what I don't have. Those
achievements outside of the Animus are not multiplayer. They're still part of the game. They're not the multiplayer aspect of the game. So I would say one-third is from the multiplayer.
Yeah, it's less than a third that's out of the Animus, because there's only like five or six that are when you're not in the Animus.
So I'd say, all right, then fine. Then
don't hurt yourself with the fractions.
No,
the majority.
One-fourth is from the Animus.
Two-fourths or a half are from...
Yeah, and then the other fourth is from the multiplayer. I'll leave it at that. But, some of these achievements are really... Are the ones I've cracked. Because, like I said, some of them are not... They're not laid out for you. You really kind of have to, you know, be lucky and fall into them. Like, I mean, your character, Phelps, he wears a hat. Because, you know, it's the 1940s. What fucker doesn't wear a hat?
Exactly. Everyone wears a hat.
Cool people wear fedoras. It's just fact.
It is, in fact, a fact. If you are cool, you own a fedora and you wear it.
And you rock it.
Yeah.
You rock it like, whoa.
And you tilt it like...
To the side. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are certain instances where you run into an assailant who decides that they don't want to be taken in, obviously.
Obviously.
You know, and they don't got a gun on them, so they're ready to brawl you. So there's actually a melee, you know, outside of a bat or, you know, picking up something and stabbing somebody like I think you could do in GTA. You could pick up random weapons that weren't guns or throw things at people.
You can throw things at people, yeah.
Yeah. In this case, it doesn't seem like no one's brought a knife to any fights yet. It's either been straight up, we're going to duke it out right now, or we're going to shoot at you. And
yeah, because you don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Well, yeah, but you can bring a knife to a knife fight.
It was either these guns or Tommy guns. That's what it was.
You could bring a knife to a knife fight. You could bring a knife
to... Have you been to a knife fight?
Yep.
Were there knives at the knife fight?
Yep, and guns.
Well,
but that's because they're shady people. But you can bring a knife to a knife fight. You can bring one to a fist fight, but you're cheating. Realize when you bring it in that you are cheating right then and there. But
well, if you're going to a prearranged fight, you're already a little bit skeevy to begin with.
I know, that's so when you call your buddy, but look, I ain't going in with no knife or gun, but you need to have some knives and guns. So when I come out, I can arm up. Like,
that,
for real.
That's, no. That's what your wingman is for.
But anyway, getting back, there was a
brawl. Don't make me beat you with that wad of hair.
There is, don't do it. Don't do it. But there is a brawling system, and they do teach you. So, you know, they've got their arms up. You have to have your arms up. And there's actually an achievement, which I didn't realize was an achievement until I did it, where you survive a fight without the other assailant knocking your hat off.
Like, there's an achievement for keeping your hat on? For
beating the hell out of someone without losing your hat. Yeah.
I need to own this game.
Yeah. Obviously. I mean, and, you know, when you're running, because there's a lot of, you know, assailants who are running from you. Yeah. No shit. you know, and your partner will always yell at you, your gun is your last option. So don't be like me and instantly take your gun out and shoot them in the back of the head. Because, you know, you might be able to interrogate them later and they might have information you just might need.
So don't shoot everyone.
But they give you the option where, you know, you can grapple them. Like, you can tack them to the ground if you can get up to them. You know, you can aim your gun at them like you're going to shoot them. But, like, a bigger circle will fill that in. And once it's fully in, if you shoot, you'll shoot up in the air and they'll stop.
Okay.
Or you can just shoot them in the back of the head, panda style. Like me.
Just, like, make me run. No, make me run.
Oh, man. Pat. And granted, you know, 1940s, big-ass fucking cars. And there's a lot of chase sequence that require you to jump in your car and chase somebody down. And I feel like I'm in, like, Tokyo Drift in the 1940s. Because, you know, you...
Ding, 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 ding.
I wish Teriyaki Boys would play in my fucking car. But because the cars are so big, obviously, when you're speeding and you go to take a corner, your car is going to swerve. There's a lot more mass to your car in the 1940s.
Well, duh.
But, I mean, there are such big cars everywhere, so you can't help but hit somebody.
Yes, you can.
No, you can't. Like, I be hitting cars all the time. I don't hit people, but I hit cars.
You hit cars, you hit poles, you hit lampposts.
I know. And I love it
because... Trash barrels.
The smart thing is that the people in this town, I think they're so used to cars just flailing around that when they see your car, they just jump. They move. So I have not killed anyone with my vehicle.
Well,
which
that's
I did
great.
A lot in GTA.
Yeah, you just were the queen of vehicular manslaughter.
Manslaughter. But no, but it's funny because if you get close to a patron and you like tap them and they jump out of the way, your partner will be like, you know, it is our job to protect the civilians. I'm like, no shit. I'm trying to get this kitty diddler off the street. You know what? If someone has a broken foot by the end of it, I think my job is done. But regardless, it is very involved. The stories are all really unique, mm-hmm. which I like. Because, you know, going in homicide, oh, somebody's been found dead. Let's figure out who did it. But all the motives seem to be very unique to each case.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was that there seemed to be some allusion to Black Dahlia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they do reference it. And mind you, I'm only in homicide, and I know that I think there are probably a couple of more departments that I'll end up going through mm-hmm. in this game. But one of the first murders you get in homicide, you know, you find this woman. She's dead. She's naked. I think she's missing jewelry, and she's got this huge, pretty much cracked skull, and she's got BD written on her belly.
BD, the letters?
Yeah, as in Black Dahlia.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's weird. Like, there's this message sprawled on her. In lipstick, not blood. Okay. Which you find out later. And your partner Galloway is like, I've been working the Black Dahlia case forever, and we've been getting the letters from him before, and we think that there's a whole bunch of guys now in LA who are, like, copycatting it, so we're trying to find which ones are the legit ones and which ones aren't. And you go through several different murder cases where you have to really be paying attention to your victim, because the ones that are really linked to that case are the ones that are usually naked. They do have some type of blunt force trauma towards their head or their neck. Jewelry is missing, and so far no one's had a slit mouth yet, because I know in the original Black Dahlia case, they found, I think it was Elizabeth Short, I think that was her name, and her mouth was slit, I think initially. So I actually think that's going to play a part when you find which one of these cases are actually really linked to that particular case, because so far none of the women have had any mouth disfiguration yet.
Hmm.
But yeah, they do reference.
I think it's really interesting that they've, you know, tried
a case that was unsolved even back then. So I don't know how they're going to try to tie it up into a case that you'll finish in this game.
But I think that it's very interesting to really set the mood and the tone for being in that area that they do bring in the Black Dahlia case in some form as something that you explore.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I have to say, you know, from the experience I know that you're having, because I hear it living underneath you when you play it and how often
I know, I really should use my Astro headset so I don't wake you up, but I want you guys to know what I'm doing.
But it sounds really rich and really deep and very engrossing. And
like I said, I think I've only just started touching the surface. Because, I mean, I think what will happen is, because like I said, it's open world, but it's not like, oh, I'm just going to jump over to here and just do only vehicle crimes or do... I think every time you progress to a different chair, you're going to start seeing dispatch calls be varied depending on where you are in your game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a great way of opening up this particular town instead of just saying, yep, this is a big world, but you can't go here, here, and here yet.
But it obviously sounds like it is something that Rockstar has really crafted to not be something that you just jump in and you finish. You know, it sounds to me like a lot of these interrogation pieces, finding the clues and running through the story,
they really do require you to think and go slow. I mean, like I said, you could totally go in there and be, you know, dunk OG and just assume everybody's lying, have no evidence, and still manage to pull off a conviction. I mean, you can do it, but I mean, you don't get nearly as much rep for it. And I think you can choose to be a bad cop in that regard, or be a good cop and actually do your job and find all the dirt.
Now, do you think the length and the time and the investment is going to be a deterrent for maybe your casual gamer picking this up, or?
With the way things are right now and the type of games that are out there right now, I actually think this might pull in more casual gamers. Because, I mean, when people ask me what I thought this game was compiled of, when people ask me, I'm like, take a dash of GTA, mix it in with the intellect and the thought process of Heavy Rain and put it in the 1940s. So, I mean, it's got something for people who, I mean, you're not always in a car shooting all the time.
Would you say that Heavy Rain is something the casual gamer would pick up and run with?
I think in terms of the game mechanics where they're not having to use multiple buttons. I mean, granted, there was the whole finger twister thing. But, I mean, someone like Eshmom could navigate in Heavy Rain. I don't think she would absorb it the way that, you know, the game was meant to be taken. But she could
operate. She'd have a mental breakdown as soon as Jason got lost.
But I'm just saying, in terms of mechanics, it's easily operated.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And I mean, and in terms of the interrogation part where you're not doing a lot of action and it's really a lot of listening and observing.
Right.
That might appease to someone who's not used to, oh my god, I have to learn all
this. Clawhand.
Right, exactly. Because pretty much you're listening. They give you three buttons. Are they telling the truth, lying, or thing? And then it's a matter of blue, yellow, or green. And then
sometimes evidence. Blue and yellow make green.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, right. Mechanic-wise, I think casual gamers might be more versed to jumping into this because it's not nearly, oh my god, you got to hold R bumper and left trigger to do a triple sal cow off the building. And it actually does kind of have that element that Assassin's Creed had where you could run up. Like, if you're running up something and you just would skate over it.
Uh-huh. The free run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that where, you know, if you run up to something when you're in pursuit, depending on how high it is, you can climb over it or slide down it. And the character will do it for you. And I know some people are like, oh, so he's just going to do it and I can just sit here. So, I mean, for hardcore gamers, they might be like, you know, I could do that myself. But someone who isn't like that would be like, oh, that's refreshing. They don't have to sit here and bash three buttons to run up these stairs and slide down this flagpole real fast.
Right.
So, I mean, it really kind of depends on the type of gamer that you are. But I think casual gamers might find this a refreshing step.
Cool. So I'm going to ask the question because, you know, it's what we do. It's part of who we are and all that good stuff. Buy it, rent it, wouldn't suck as a gift. Which one?
Buy it. I mean, if you're a Rockstar fan. If you're not a Rockstar fan, then I mean, rent. But if you are a Rockstar fan, buy it.
Cool.
You will not be disappointed, I don't think. I mean, I think right now, It is only one player. I don't know if they plan to do something where it will become open, like an online open world scenario.
I don't know how that would work.
So right now it's one player. So there's no,
I like the multiplayer that was in GTA, but it really wasn't a mission-based multiplayer.
No,
it was
just
play against other people,
right.
Or you could just, you know, free world it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that would lend
itself
to...
Right, because you couldn't have 15 people working the exact same case.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I'd like to see them attempt to do something, though. Because, I mean, you do always have a partner.
Yeah, and that may be the way in.
So, I mean, like, a dual co-op to have, like, two people assessing, like, random cases. Because I know you can buy certain cases, like, on the Marketplace or PSN mm-hmm. when that's working.
When it's working, if it's working.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd love to see that work in to a multiplayer and it be, you know, like online, like a co-op online where you can do separate cases that are not particularly a part of the storyline
mm-hmm.
that you can, you know, get graded on how many clues you'll find and what your conclusions will be. I think that'd be an interesting way to incorporate a multiplayer in the game. But either way, it's really good. I really enjoy it.
Obviously. Well, it sounds to me like it definitely would be the game or the type of game that would be up my alley. So now I really need to buy it. Like, I was interested in the game, but, you know, in my mind, I'm going, okay, I've got Portal 2 I've got to run through. I've got Mortal Kombat I've got to run through. And so, you know, L.A. Noire was kind of pushed back on my list of, you know, definitely before the summer's out getting a hold of it. But I'm sold on it. Well, since you brought the game, I'm going to finish out the show with the anime. See, I'm going to flip the script a little bit.
All right.
Mostly because I haven't really been playing any games this week. And the only thing I've had time to do is actually watch anime a little bit in the evenings. So, as I go through puberty here.
Again. The second time.
Hey, second time's always better than the first. Actually, no, it's not. It's actually really not.
Oh, by the way, guys, we survived the rapture.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. We are here. Well, I mean, I knew I wasn't going.
First.
But I knew I wasn't going, and I do want to, you know, bring this up. But, like, literally.
You weren't getting raptured?
I knew it. I knew I wasn't going to get raptured. But literally the morning that the rapture was supposed to happen, I woke up because I had to go to work. And it was, you know, it's not really quiet on the street. Like, there's always cars and stuff coming up and down the street. You know that.
Yes.
And when I woke up at, like, 5 that morning, there was, like, nothing. Like, no birds were chirping, nothing.
and I'm
on the third floor. So I'm like, holy shit. I'm like,
did the rapture happen?
I was concerned. So I came downstairs.
And you turned on the TV to make sure the news was on.
I was looking for Eshdog because usually when I come downstairs, Eshdog's got to go out. So I'm like, oh, she'll totally rush right up. Nowhere to be found. So I'm like, oh,
the
no.
dog got raptured, but not me?
No,
what ran through your head?
I was like, holy crap, she went to dog heaven. So like, no, I'm going to check on Eshmom, because if Eshmom's here, rapture didn't happen. Because if anyone's going in this house, it's Eshmom. She'll go. But I peek into her room, I'm like, oh, nope, there's a body in there, okay. All right, the rapture did not happen. Eshmom is still safe and secure on Earth. Wonderful. And I got to breathe. But yeah. But we're all here.
Yeah, so much for that.
I know.
I was looking forward. I thought that would make the weekend interesting. But
literally, I know somebody at my job went to our boss, who's really scary. We call her T-Rex, at the office when she's not around. Literally went to her office and said, if it's raining fire on Saturday, do you still expect us to attempt to come into work? Because he's very religious. So, I mean, I think he was actually being somewhat serious. And she's like, if it's raining fire, then yes, I will want you to make an attempt to get here. Now, mind you, if it was raining fucking fire, everything would be burning. So the last thing I'd want to do is walk into a brick building that's on fire. I might like Bertucci's, but I don't want to be a pizza. But regardless, rapture, pucky.
Yep.
Oh, not to mention, well, we're not supposed to know when it happens. It's supposed to just be like, surprise!
Actually, the herald of that is the coming of the Lord. Hello? And guess what? I didn't see Jesus anywhere on Saturday.
No, I saw Jesus everywhere. I just didn't see Jesus.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, so moving right along to the anime. So this week I've spent a little time catching up on the second season of a series that I really like called The World God Only Knows. And as I get a couple more episodes into it, I will have a piece on it. But I actually spent some time running through an entire series this week on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so the series is called Mine Barrels of Iron.
Okay.
I hadn't heard anything about it before. It was actually licensed by Funimation. The series itself actually ran a couple of years ago, but, you know, I always get interested whenever I'm looking at things, either on a streaming service or if I happen across a box set in the Best Buy when they say complete series, because I love doing a marathon. I don't like cliffhangers when it comes to anime. I really just want to sit down and plunk through a whole story,
mm-hmm.
or at least be able to plunk through a whole season. As opposed to, you know, dealing with it like broadcast TV where I've got, you know, 40 minutes of something and now I got to wait 7 days. You didn't
have to
tell
me back in the day when we used to do VHSs, back when I used to collect, because, I mean, I still have my whole collection of Fushigi Yugi on VHS. And literally every 2 weeks I'd have to go to Suncoast, go to the anime and see if they had the new VHS. So talk about cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Having to collect that series, which is, oh, I don't know, 52 fucking episodes.
I don't envy you at all for that. But on Netflix, they have the complete series of Lime Barrels of Iron. So I thought, all right, well, I'm going to put this in my queue. And, you know, there are 26 episodes, so I'll start it on Monday. And I should, by the end of the week, be able to get through it.
Oh, my God, wait. It took you a week to get through 26 episodes?
I'm only able to watch them in the evenings, and because Ahefa has to get up early in the morning, she doesn't, you know, marathon till 3 a.m.
Oh.
Yeah. Some of us don't have it like that.
I only have it like that on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah. Well, I don't even have it like that on Mondays and Tuesdays, so, you know.
I mean, I got through 2 seasons of Glee in literally, like, a three-day time span.
Yes.
Like, not even a week.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's
you had
commitment.
A weekend. But you had a weekend to help you out, so you could just, you know, go
ape shit. That is commitment.
I agree, and I tip your hat. I'm
addicted
have a weekend.
To it. If it's a full season, I will marathon that shit. I'll just get it all done.
I will marathon when I can, and when it is not appropriate, I will not marathon. So I couldn't marathon Lime Barrels, but I have to say I was very glad that I picked it up. So the story is basically you have this kid. His name is Hayase. His full name is Koichi Hayase. And he's in, I want to say high school. You know how they do that middle school in high school together? So it's like, you know, 8th grade through and not necessarily. I think he's somewhere in the 8th or 9th grade area. He's a youngin' in the high school that he goes to, okay?
All right.
And Koichi is not a strong guy. You know, he's mousy. He's the guy that is protected. So he has two really close friends. I'm blanking on their names right now. I don't know why I'm blanking on their names. It's driving me crazy. But he has
a chick who he's madly in love with, right?
Yeah, a chick that he's madly in love with. And then he's got, you know, his tough friend who's, you know, tall and handsome and fights everybody off because bullies like to pick on Koichi, and so his friend Yajima is the protector, okay? And Koichi has this thing for his blonde friend, who he's just, like, head over heels enamored with, but knows could never like him because he's mousy and he's a weakling and blah, 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 blah. And so his desire is to just be stronger. You know, one day he's going to be strong, be able to develop, and be the kind of person that
he thinks that this girl
that
desires.
This girl desires, wants, and would want. Okay? And so he basically gets picked on this particular day by the bullies, and they're like, look, before this class, you need to run into the city and get us these hot, you know, sticky buns and bring them back, and they need to be hot, or we're going to kick your ass.
Hot crust buns. Hot
and so he buns. Decides to take a shortcut through this forest in order to make it there and back, because he only has like 15 minutes. And as he's passing through the woods in the shrine, he's thinking about, you know, trying to be stronger so that those guys couldn't pick on him and things like that. And at the same time, you get this flash where you're now someplace completely different. Something's going on in space. There's a naked chick in a mecha, and you're like, wait a minute. Whoa,
wait, naked chick in mecha?
Wait a minute. She's naked. Why am I in space? Why is the naked chick in a mecha in space? Why is she crying?
Is it
Vandred? What's going on?
No, I'm just
no, it's not Vandred.
Okay.
And so, basically what happens in Lime Barrels is that through an accident, Koichi dies. But he doesn't realize it. So he's having this moment in the woods, and he stops.
In the woods?
In the woods. Stop it. And as he's sitting there thinking, he looks up and sees something coming at him. Now, in the moment that you're in space, there's a very evil, scary-looking, white-haired dude.
Mm-hmm.
Very much in an outfit similar to one that Lelouch wears in...
Code Geass.
Except his is all white, so his outfit is white to match his hair. Very, very ominous.
So would it be like the white suit that Suzaku wears?
Suzaku, yes.
Suzaku.
Yep. So he does something that knocks the chick in the mecha off her path. Because she's not actually piloting the mecha. She's just having, like, a breakdown in it. And you're just like, oh, naked chick, why are you crying in the mecha?
Because she ain't got no clothes.
I mean, I know, space is cold, but you're in a mecha. I would hope that it has, like, you know, central air.
With all the pistons moving around, you should be nice and toasty in there.
I'm just saying.
Pistons.
And so there are these two groups that are duking it out between each other. The guy with the white hair, we learn later, leads what's called the Kato organization and knocks this chick off her original trajectory. And because of that, basically, she ends up landing on Hayase. And he
kills
dies. But he doesn't die, because after that happens, and everyone's talking about, oh my god, we can't find the mecha. Where did it go? We gotta send a crew out to retrieve it. We've gotta get it before Kato. And the Kato guys are, we have to get it before Judah. So then we learn, oh, the bad guys are the Kato organization, so I guess evidently the good guys are the Judah organization.
Not even. They could be two bad factions that both want the same thing.
For they could be. You have to watch the series to figure it out. So you look down, and the chick comes piling out of the mecha, which is glorious, I have to say. And the series itself does the CGI 2.5D melt for the mechas, for sure. But the characters themselves are traditional 2D, you know, drawing. And she jumps up. She's like, I'm so sorry! And she's, like, still crying. And Hayase gets up and he's like, oh, no worries, it's not a big deal, everything's cool. And you can see on his uniform that his uniform is just covered in blood, but he's just chatting and talking like there's no thing. He hasn't noticed the blood that's yet on him and stuff like that. And he feels bad that the girl is, you know, naked and, like, he sees all of her bits. So he does the blood thing, spurting out of his nose, and he gives her his jacket and puts her on his bike and takes her back to his house.
Yeah,
so
he's completely loving.
He's completely forgotten his whole reason for running through the woods to begin with.
Well, he doesn't go back to school.
He
got the fuck knocked out of him.
But he doesn't realize it. He doesn't realize it at all. Like, even though he gave her his jacket and it's covered in blood, he doesn't realize it's blood or doesn't factor into him. I'm guessing because he's just mesmerized because she's so naked. Okay.
And he's probably in fucking shock.
Okay. Puts her on a bike, takes her to the house, introduces her to the parents, says, hey, she doesn't have a home. She can't remember who she is, so she's going to stay with us.
She's
going to
sleep in my bed with me naked since she has no clothes.
Right. Bye. Then a fight happens over here and people are looking for the mecha. The mecha's, like, magically disappeared. And she's like, so was that a dream? No, because he was covered in blood. What's going on? And as you get further into it, you learn the girl's name is Emmy. And she starts getting a couple of memories back and then realizes that, oh, yeah, there's a Machina fight and I have to help. And so she's like, you have to use Lime Barrel. And so Hayase is like, I have to do what? And literally she takes his hand and puts it on her boob and says, just call for him. And he's like, call for who? She goes, just say, Lime Barrel, come forth. And he's just, like, still looking at his hand on her boob. And, of course, Blaze's like, Lime Barrel, come forth. And, like, out of the sky pops down this huge-ass mecha. And he's like, now I have the power to be a true ally of justice. And you're like, oh, here we go.
No, there was another guy who talked about being, you know, an ally of justice. He was, you know, called Light, you know, from Death Note. And then he thought he could be God.
Yeah, well, we take that turn a little bit.
Or Kira.
You take that turn a little bit with Hayase. So he jumps in the Lime Barrel with Emmy and goes to fight these mecha. And As he takes damage, you realize and you see that the mecha actually automatically repairs itself. So when you cut off Lion Barrel's arm, it will reattach. If you jab him in the stomach, it will repair itself, unlike any other mecha that you see in the series. And so you're like, what the hell? Okay, well, I guess I realize why everyone wants to get their hands on this mecha.
It's a rare ultimate type of Pokemon mecha.
It is, actually.
It's shiny.
It is. It's a very rare card. They only printed one of them. So you get through the first episode, and he's like, yeah, now my life's going to be great. And he's like, well, actually, that's not true. I'm so sorry, Hayase. You're dead. And that's how the first episode ends. And you're like, wait, what?
So he's a Zombika?
He's the undead.
Right.
Or the living. Yeah, he's the living dead. So basically, Lion Barrel used some of its essence to do the whole repairy thing to bring him back to kind of sort of life. But he's dead. But he's alive. And he's like, my brain hurts already, and we just got through the first episode. So I wasn't sure if I was going to continue on with it. And I thought, no, I'll give it a couple more episodes so I make sure that I'm being fair here.
And?
It gets better.
Okay.
As you progress, the first few episodes, Hayase goes completely off the deep end with power.
With absolute power? The balance of power.
Corrupts, absolutely. And it does.
The balance of power.
And because of that, Emmy comes to disgust him. Or at least say that she disgusts him to try and get him to realize and to monitor himself because he does more damage than good. He ends up getting in a fight with Yajima because now that he has power, he feels like he doesn't need to be protected anymore. Because of the power that Lion Barrels has given him, he now has the ability to defend himself, be super fast, and be Superman Clark Kent walking among us. And it really goes to his head. And as you go throughout the series, it's really the exploration of Hayase to learn how to balance his power with his feelings, with his emotions. There's a space invasion that needs to be stopped. Bad guys that you thought were completely 100% bad really aren't 100% bad. Good guys that you thought were good aren't really good. Like, there's this one guy whose name is Reggie, and he pilots a mecha for Judah, but his body feels no pain. So he's similar to Lion Barrels in that he can take a lot of damage, but the fact of the matter is that he actually does take the damage. His body just doesn't have the nerve endings or whatever to feel it.
I mean, like, he could get his arm ripped off and still be fighting because it's not going to register to his brain that his arm's been ripped off.
So that makes him a very dangerous warrior. All of the Lion Barrel pilots have some kind of characteristic, very much like Gundam Wing, that makes them piloting the mecha that they pilot work really well. Like, there's a set of twins who are identical, and the only way that you can really tell them apart is their hair, that pilot a mecha that when it attacks, it basically can make the pilot have hallucinations. And so one does the scary hallucinations in the set of twins, and the other one does the fun ones that make people happy while they're ripping them apart.
Huh.
But at the same time, it's not completely serious. They have a lot of comedic elements. Like, some of the people who are pilots for the Kato group, like, one of them is this really oversexed woman who, in one episode, basically hijacks the younger brother twin, because they're identical.
Oh, they're boys.
Yeah, one's a girl, one's a boy.
But so the only way you can tell the difference between them is their hair.
Is their hair, because it's both dark, but the boy has a short, straight, blunt cut, and the girl has an angled cut.
Oh, that's tricky.
Yeah, it's a trap. Yeah. And so eventually, to tell them apart, Hayase actually puts a barrette in the girl's hair that she doesn't take out. And she goes, see, now you can actually see that you're kind of pretty. And so she never takes it out. And so for the rest, from that point on, you can be like, oh, barrette, that's the girl. Well, the pilot from the Kato organization, I can't remember her name, but she's got really big boobs and red hair. It basically is oversexed. She's kind of on the borderline dominatrix.
Okay.
And so she comes across the boy twin because they got separated in this cave. And
does she rape him?
They don't show it to you, but I believe that she does. Because literally, he has his clothes on 1 minute, and then the next minute, like, they're panning down, and you get to see his, like, budding deep V cut. You know, that cut that dudes get when they're in shape? That V. And you start to see that, and then the camera stops, and he's, like, tied up all bondage way, and she, like, jumps on him, and he starts turning, like, really, like, pink in the face, and he kind of looks like, you know how most of the time when girls in hentai are doing the bondage thing and they get that, like, blush?
Because they're embarrassed, but it feels good.
Yeah, he gets that look on his face. Oh, no. And she's like, this is going to be so good again. And you're just like, did you just rape him?
Again?
Because you just said again, so you're going to do it again. Like, you raped him? And he liked it? And so, like, an explosion happens, and they end up getting out of the cave. And he doesn't say anything, but towards the end, there's another episode where she's back in the scene, and he sees her, and he starts to, like, blush and do that kind of, like, I missed you blush. And he's like, wait a minute.
He likes it.
He liked it. And she makes a remark, and his sister goes all berserk. And he's like, we can't talk about this now. We have bigger fish to fry. And she's like, bigger. And he's like, no, ew, bad, wrong, badong. So the comedic elements are spaced far enough apart that it doesn't swing one way or another. But what I liked about Lying Barrels is once you get past the first three episodes, you really can't actually get into caring about a character, whether it's Emmy, because she has a lot of things that are going on. She's still trying to remember her past. And as it starts really coming into the story and you learn about her past, it's really quite traumatic. Or Hayase, which has its very traumatic moments and has his turning point to become a real hero. It actually is very enjoyable. It's a really nice 26 arc story. Things that need to be explained are explained. Things that don't really need to be explained aren't. And it is a true ending in that there is a solution. And so it's not one of those, and here's the hook for, you know, another 13 episodes.
Or possibly an OVA.
Yeah. They literally said, no, here's the story. If we want to do something different, then we can tell a completely new story. And I like that. I like having closure. Right. As opposed to a continue, ... you know.
Right.
So, Lying Barrels of Iron, I would say that is absolutely worth a rent. So if you have Netflix, definitely grab a hold of that. I don't think it's available on Hulu Plus yet. I know that it is available on DVD, and you can get it in box set. Amazon has it listed right now. But if you have Netflix, put it in your queue. It'll definitely, definitely be worth it. So that's my thing. If you want to see more or hear more about what we're thinking, doing, where we've been, where we're going to be, because, you know, we're really not very stationary. We're always moving and shaking and doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were shaking just a minute ago.
What?
See? You just shook.
You hit me.
Well, I mean, but you're still shaking. You can check out the stuff that we write on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use the short address, which is
ESH.co. That is ESH.co. The short address will bounce you to the long one. You can check out any articles that have been written within the week. Any questions or comments will go to mailbag@landofesh.com. We are available on iTunes for free. Subscribe and leave a comment.
That's right. If you want to get our episodes the moment that we make them available on the interwebs, the best way to do that is to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes by going to the iTunes Music Store and searching for Electric Sisterhood, all one word, and hit that fancy schmancy subscribe button so that way you can get the freshness when it is hot piping fresh. If you don't want to do that, you can also find us in the Zune Marketplace, again, searching the same way for Electric Sisterhood. And if that's not your bag, you don't want us on your mobiles the moment that we put the stuff out fresh,
you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine, but you should be looking out for the other shows that fly underneath our banner.
That's right. We're not the only thing that makes up the Land of Esh. Our episodes go out fresh on Mondays, but you can follow that up with a brand new episode of the Boston Bastard Brigade podcast, hosted by King Baby Duck and his lovable bunch of bastards on a regular basis, that basis being Tuesday. Then follow that up with all your nerd needs and gadget. I was going to say gadget gasms, but I don't know. Can you say that?
We're Ash. We can say whatever the fuck we want.
Cool. So you can do that with a brand new episode of the Geek Aggro podcast, which comes out on Wednesday, hosted by our boy Deuces Wild, as well as follow us on Twitter, interact with us on our Facebook page, which we think is pretty awesome. You can ask us questions and we just shoot the shit about games and whatevers, you know, so you can do that by going to facebook.com/landofesh. You want to see everybody on Twitter? The fastest way to do that is go to twitter.com/ninjasista and look at the Land of Esh list that has everyone who makes up stuff for the Land of Esh, including people that work with us on the magazine, which you should cop. And if you haven't, there's still time available before the next issue comes out. You can do that by going to landofesh.com, clicking on magazine, and checking it out. And then check out all major credit cards accepted. And I think that pretty much covers everything that we need to. I mean, they know about the YouTubes and the Flickr. And if you want to find the Electric Sister or what's going on with the Land of Esh, just Google search it. You'll find us. So with that, it's time for the shit that we did. What one thing are you digging? What one thing? Singular. What one thing are you, like, digging? Like, this week, Pandalicious.
No fucking drama.
No more drama?
I fucking dig that every day. I wish I had no drama. That's it.
That's it. Drama.
Drama.
All right.
I dig no drama.
The shit digging is no drama.
Yeah,
it's a drama-free existence. Yeah, is what you're saying.
Yep.
All right, that's fair.
What about you?
Okay, that's cool. I'm gonna go with. I am digging, and I've been thinking about this a while because I wasn't really sure if it was gonna work out for me or not, but it is. So I'm digging that string guitar for Rock Band.
You're still fantasizing about that?
I am. I've decided I'm going to get it. I'm having issues.
Where the fuck are you going to put it?
Well, here's the problem. I'm having issues with both of my guitars. One of them, my red note isn't strumming anymore. As you all know, I love Rock Band. So I started using my wired guitar and the green one's gone on it. So I'm like, damn it!
How convenient that your stuff keeps breaking.
It's because I haven't used those guitars in forever because I was playing
How
keyboard.
How convenient for you.
You know what? I hate what you're insinuating.
I'm not insinuating anything.
Yes, you are, and I don't really cotton to it. You're in my home. You're in my home.
No.
This is my domain.
This was all mine until you rolled up. So I've got
no. This wasn't got all presidents. Yours. This wasn't all yours. All of that was yours. This was the previous tenants.
Regardless, you're on my family land.
I was here first.
Regardless. Right,
no.
Let's get over it. Let's get over it.
You know what? Let's just do that. But yeah, I'm digging it. I think that'll be the next guitar I get. It probably won't be until like the fall.
I'm about to say, because you got that sitting there. You have your drum set that you still have not.
I know, because I got to get these boxes out of the way, but I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer. You can actually see my living room. So
I'm glad to say that we got rid of that
that's my shit.
Fall leaf from your floor. We got
That's my shit. The Fender Starcaster string guitar for Rock Band 3. That's I'm digging
that's it.
It. Okay. I'm digging it. So okay. With that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out of here.
Later.